Welcome to Talking Book Publishing with Kathleen Kaiser.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Book Publishing. I'm Kathleen Kaiser, and this is the start of season three of the podcast. And this year, we're going to be doing it a little different because I'm going to have Dana Moriarty be my co-host. So the two of us will be interviewing people instead of the way we've done it in the past with two separate interviews. We're combining it into one longer review interview and thinking people are going to enjoy it. Today, we have Scott Ellis, who is probably the kind of person many of you, especially if you already have a book out or you're about to launch a book, want to know about audiobooks. It's kind of the big mystery out there right now. And we're going to be having a WPN Zoom meeting on Monday, January 16th at 7 p.m. Pacific. And if you want to sign up for it, it's free. And Scott will be talking the evening then about it and going through a lecture on everything you need to know. But anyway, welcome Scott Ellis.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be on the inaugural episode of season three. Congratulations on the first two, and I wish you many more.
Thank you very much. So the audiobook market, it's taken off. Everybody's hearing about it. You see people with earplugs in everywhere you're going. You don't know if they're listening to podcasts or listening to a book, but it seems to be the book market is growing. Can you give us some statistics about it?
Yeah, certainly. It's a $16 billion a year industry. The talk that I give that you referenced in the intro, I actually call it every fourth reader is listening. That's how many audiobooks are being sold. In 2021, for the first time, audiobook sales eclipsed that of ebook. Of course, print books are still the top dog in the industry, but audiobooks are creeping up there. They've had 10, 11 years of double-digit growth. You and I were talking just earlier about the fact that most recently, it's been a 25% increase. So it's certainly not the kind of industry that you would only want your book in, but it is a great plus and to add to your sales platforms.
Now, when people are looking at it, because that's a huge market and it's obviously rapidly growing, because the younger demographics like to listen. And I think after COVID, Dana had mentioned before the show, a lot of people just started listening to things so they could do work around the house and you're not tied to watching TV or reading a book. You can listen to your book. That one in every four is listening is a fabulous thing to know. So tell me, if this is so large, what kind of percentages do you make? I mean, what's kind of the price point, that type of thing, audiobooks? What are we really looking at?
That's a great question, and it's a pretty broad answer because it depends on where you're releasing your book within the market. So, let's start with the top dog, which is Audible.com. Audible is owned by Amazon. So when you release your book on Audible, it's automatically on Audible, which is connected to your Amazon.com listing for the book, and it also goes out on Apple Books. If you sign an exclusive deal with Audible, then they set the price for the book, and they take 60% off the top of the sale, and then the author gets the remaining 40%. There is another couple of other avenues out there, probably the second largest one being Findaway Voices. And what they do is they have a broader release market. If you go to their website or if you Google Findaway distribution, you'll be able to see an entire list because I couldn't possibly remember them all. But a couple of the standouts are that you would also be included in the Barnes & Noble listing. And you also have the opportunity of doing libraries, if you can convince your local library to carry your audiobook, that you could go to them also. Now, through Findaway Voices, you would also still be on the big three of Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. They just cut your royalty from 40% down to 25%. So, yeah, lots of math right there. You know, with Audible, they really control everything in terms of price, sales distribution, and all of that. If you go over to something like Findaway, which was just purchased by Spotify, so now your book would also be available on Spotify. And as you mentioned, you know, so many people are listening to streaming content, whether it's music, podcasts, or audiobooks, that Spotify is becoming a pretty major player in the game.
Well, yes, because it sounds like, you know, and depending if you only get 25, but 25% of a bigger whole may be better than 40%. You know, it's that old J. Paul Getty thing, 10% of something is better than 100% of nothing, you know, right. And I think, you know, 25% is still a really good royalty. Now, do most publishers do this? If you have a publisher, are they producing them or are they independent now?
I think it depends if the publisher has their own means of distribution. Some publishers do. They keep the books behind their paywall. And then if you come to their website and buy it, they can release the files for download that are protected by their paywall. I think some of the small publishers see, you know, why reinvent the wheel if all of these other companies like Findaway and Audible have already figured out how to do that for them. They let them do it.
All right. So then there's various distribution methods, and it just depends on. So if you're an indie author, you're self-published, and you're putting your book out there, Audible or Findaway or one of the other comparable companies like that are worth investigating to see what you'll get. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
What do you recommend?
I like to play games. So, you know, this is not a scientific study, so don't quote me, but it would seem to me that when a new book is released, that's when it's the hottest, when sales are going to be the biggest. So I recommend to my clients, go with Audible for an exclusive contract. You let the book get out there. It makes its splash. You get the 40% royalties. After 90 days of being on the market, you're able to revert to a non-exclusive contract, which means now you can go on to those other platforms that we were mentioning before and are far too numerous to memorize. I'm an audiobook narrator. Can you tell how often I trip on my own words? And so you kind of get the book reintroduced on some new platforms, which might actually breathe some new life into sales.
Well, that's sort of like with eBooks. If you do the KDP exclusive in the beginning, Amazon really helps promote you because they make money off of it. And then after 90 days, you can have it everywhere else and do other eBook promotions. A similar situation.
Sounds very, very similar.
Okay. So now let's get to you a second. How did you get started in this?
Kind of on a dare from a first grader. this is one of my favorite stories. So I was a theater major and then decided when graduation was coming that I didn't want to act like a waiter. So I went back to school and got certified to be a classroom teacher. And I spent about 25 years basically at middle school teaching literature to sixth grade. And in the last 5 years of my teaching career, I went to two elementary schools in my town. I live in the western part of Massachusetts, and I was the teaching librarian for two elementary schools. And so with a theater degree and 25 years of reading to sixth graders in a way to get them to listen, I got pretty good at that. And one of my first graders at one point said, gee, Mr. Ellis, you should be a professional reader. and I quipped, well, you know, I read to you guys all day long. The school department pays me for this. So I guess I already am. And the thought never left me. You know, I was already an audiobook listener. And I said, I wonder who these narrators are and how they do this. And I went and I found the platform to be matched up with authors looking to get their books in narration. I auditioned for 4 books that first night and won 2 of them. Odds I've never matched. And for narrators out there listening, it's not a meet that. It was crazy. It's never happened, but it was kind of a sign that, yeah, this is where I need to be. And I started narrating after school and on the weekends. And very quickly, it got to the point where school was getting in the way of my narration, and I was eligible to take early retirement. And so I did. And now I'm a full-time audiobook narrator and voice actor.
Wow.
Well, I have a question kind of if we backtrack before we learned more about Scott, which is, I mean, we talk about royalties and stuff, and I mean, royalties sound great, but what is the production cost to do an audiobook? Because I mean, 25% versus 40% royalty could really matter when you're talking about, you know, as a self-published author, like what that cost, out-of-pocket cost is to create an audiobook.
Yeah. That is a great question and probably the number one concern, and rightfully so. And people that are going to attend this workshop that we're doing together are certainly going to be able to ask questions and pick my brain about it. Just like the platform thing, there's quite a bit that you need to know in different avenues. So one of the first things that you need to know is, how do we narrators get paid? And we'll talk about why it's a little expensive as we get further in. There's 2 ways that we can get paid. One is royalty share, where we're actually getting a cut of your royalties. And the other is called PFH, stands for per finished hour. So let's kind of break them both down. So in a royalty share agreement, it would cost you, the author, nothing up front. I get paid nothing. And then once the book is released, you and I would share that 40%. There's another level up called royalty share plus. And what that means is that you and I would share the production costs. We'll talk more about those in a moment. So we're going to have some kind of, share that we're both going to put in. And when the book is released, you would pay your narrator whatever that agreed sum is. And then we would share the royalties. So that's where the royalty share plus comes in. The PFH rate per finished hour means, let's say that we agreed on $100 per finished hour and the book ran 10 hours. At the end of the production, you would owe $1,000 to your narrator, and then you keep 100% of the royalties. So those are the main ways that narrators get paid. Why is it a little more expensive? You know, I've had authors say, I don't understand. You're just going to turn on your microphone and read my book, right? If you've been listening to me speak off the cuff, you don't want to hear me read off the cuff. So no, I would never turn on my microphone and read cold. It's an artistic process, just like you, the author, goes through. You know, to kind of turn that on its head, it would be like me asking you, why did it take you so long to write your book? You just turned on your computer and started typing, right? Of course you didn't do that. You know, you went through all your brainstorming. You went through your rough drafting, your editing, your rewrites. I do the same thing as a narrator. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read your book in its entirety. And then for my clients, I offer a pre-recording Zoom conference because I want to hear about your book from your mouth. I want to hear about these characters that are in your head. I want to pick your brain about it so that when I get down to the microphone, I'm ready. So first thing, I've read the book, I've taken notes, I have all my characters kind of thought out. I have a meeting with you. We kind of get on the same page. I then narrate the first 15 minutes of the book. I send that off to you. We have another conversation about what did you think about the tone, the pace, the inflection, the how I'm approaching this material. Then I read the book. I have a person who does all of my proofing. We have an online software program that we run it through that checks to make sure I said what was actually written. And then I have a human who double checks all of that. Then I go back behind the microphone and I fix all of those mistakes. And that's actually the long pole in the tent because I have to make sure that the new sentence fits in so smoothly with the other one so that there's no perception for the listener that they can pick up, oh, that was a voiceover. And I'd love to tell a story about bad voiceovers in a moment. But so then after I'm finished with the voiceovers, now it goes on to my editor who does the final editing, changing the timing and pacing, taking all out of those mouth clicks that I make and just making it sound polished and sound good. So for you to listen to 1 hour of an audiobook takes my team and I up to 8 hours to produce. So if you all of the people on my team, they have this habit of liking to be paid, you know, so, so it costs the narrator not only time, but, you know, physical money that the team requires. So it's an expensive process. If you've got, you know, an 80,000 word book that's going to run 8-9 hours, probably 9-11 hours, that means that we have spent almost 90 hours working on that book. That's over 2 weeks of full-time salary. So if I've been working on your book for over 2 weeks, in order for me to live and pay my mortgage and feed my kids, all of that stuff, I have to charge you 2 weeks of my salary. So there's a lot more, I think, that goes into it than most people realize. It's not as simple as turning on the microphone.
Yeah, that's why I asked that question, because, I mean, even in the podcast, you know, which runs a half an hour to an hour, 45 minutes on average, I mean, you know, it takes me about 3 hours to do all the things that need to be done to get it out there into the world. I mean, sound is a tricky business in everything. That's why I was curious about, you know, costs for that, because I would assume that, I mean, producing an audiobook, you could do it cheap or you could do it, you know, I'm guessing it's a range.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the old you get what you pay for adage might play in. I have, you know, I was a newbie once. I have an online classroom where I teach newbies. So I'm all for giving the newbies a chance. And I really feel like this is an industry, and I'm not super popular for this opinion because, you know, the narrators kind of want to unionize together, if you will, and say, no, if we all need to charge X, there is no minor league. And I think, you know what? Yeah, there is a minor league, as there is in any artistic endeavor. You know, the latest Tom Hanks movie, I'm sure he made more money for that movie than he did for his first movie. As great an actor as he is, he was in the minor leagues at some point. So, you know, you might get lucky and you might find a narrator who considers themselves in the minor leagues, realizes that they've got to cut their teeth and get some work and some reviews and some credits under their belt. And you might find people that are willing to do it for the royalty share. I think as you start to get into the more, you know, full-time narrators or narrators who have realized how beneficial it is to have a team behind them. Now you're starting to get into, you know, costs that really come into play. And now they see it as, this is how I make my money. This is how I make my living.
Well, it's like any business. Once you get up and running, you've got to understand what all the costs are, figure out what the ROI is, because it's not worth doing it if you're losing money.
Right.
Yeah. And I think you pay for quality. Quality is something that's really important. But so if say I had a book and I'm interested in having an audiobook done, and say it's a memoir, all right? So it has to be in a woman's voice. What do you have, like for say your company, a stable of readers, narrators?
Yes, I do. If I can do some self-promotion here, ScottEllisReads.com. That's where you can find out about us. And there's a Meet the Team tab. And we have about 9 different narrators with whom we work. They do their narration. We do all the post-production. So kind of all that final quality goes through the ears of me or my wife before it hits the market. So we have some, you know, we have our fingers in making sure that it's up to par. All of our narrators have been vetted by us. Many of them have gone through our learning program where we've taught them everything that they've needed to know. So I know what they know. and we can work with them together. So
what do you say to an author who thinks they should read their book?
I personally love that, particularly in nonfiction. You know, we've all had, say, college professors who maybe weren't the best speaker, but they were the expert in the room and we learned from them. Authors may say, I don't have a really good voice. I can't do what you do. You know, listeners are far more lenient on narrators delivering their own material, particularly in nonfiction. They expect a level of professionalism and polish and all of that from me because I'm a professional narrator, you know, but they recognize this is the expert. This is the person who's done all the research or is telling me their own personal story. And it can work. One of the first books that we produced was a book called Suspect Number One, The Man Who Got Away. It was written by Dr. Lisa Perlman. It was about the Lindbergh kidnapping. She did an enormous amount of research. And I approached her about narrating it. And I sent her 3, 4, 5 samples of me. And she kept saying, no, that's not right. That's not right. She said, I think I should do it. And so we have a mobile set of equipment, if you will, that we mail to our clients who want to do this. I work with them to set up a good recording environment. I work with them on some of the do's and don'ts of how to do it. And she narrated her book, and it hit Audible new release, number one position for police procedurals, self-narrated by the author. So it's possible. We just did another one called Marry Yourself First that the author narrated it herself, and it is out there. I haven't seen the sales numbers on it, so can't really attest to how it's done, but it was a very personal story, and it had to come from her voice, and it sounds really nice doing that.
Yeah, I think there's something on personal stories, you know, nonfiction, of having that the person in the room just telling you the story. I think there's something more intimate about it, especially if it's like a memoir, something that you've lived through, experiences, tragedies, different things. I think there, to me, that's a really good grabber if they can read. Just because you wrote the book doesn't mean you can read. You know, that's the only, to me, the problem. It's like a lot of authors have a they can write great books, but they have a hard time talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's another skill set. It's another yes. skill set.
Yeah. But if authors, if you have that skill set and think that that is something that you want to do, I would certainly look into it. And again, the presentation that we're going to be involved in mid-January, I've got some information about that. So
great.
Definitely tune in and join us for that.
Right.
My presentation that I'm going to do is not a high pressure sales thing. I'm not there to sell you on me. I'm there to sell you on audiobooks and teach you the things that you need to know, like this PFH and royalty share and what it's like to do your own book and what to look for in a narrator, how to vet them and how narrators vet you, the author. So just informational. So don't be afraid of me.
What do you think about the kind of discount applications like Chirp? Chirp's the only one I know about, but I mean, I have Chirp on my phone and I feel like it could be so great because you can get an audiobook for $2.99, but I also feel like they don't have as much of a range as Audible does, or, you know, Audible's the only other one that I would listen to. So,
right. So, you know, one thing that you have to remember is that if you're in an exclusive deal with Audible, you can't be on Chirp. But once you're in non-exclusive, you can certainly do it. And, you know, it's tough. It's you know, Kathleen was talking about ROI, that return on investment. How much of a royalty are you making on a $3 version of the audio, and you've still paid your narrator? So I think it would depend on, gosh, boy, what a great question with so many fingers and possible avenues as a business venture, because, you know, some narrators say, oh, I don't advertise the books. That's the author's deal. And I humbly disagree. I think if I help you promote your book, those are listeners that are listening to my voice and may have a book and say, oh, I want to have that guy narrate my book, or I want to go hear more from him. And now I'm going to be selling books for other authors. So to me, I should be helping to advertise. So a little bit of a digression, I guess, you know, but, you know, for $3, if you can get your audiobook into somebody's ears, maybe that is a good investment because it's a listener. No, you don't make a lot of money back on it, but boy, a new listener who could become a repeat customer who is going to tell their friends and family about your book, I guess it's a very personal decision that an author would have to make.
Yeah, it's just one of the avenues for distribution. I mean, audiobooks are like ebooks and everything else. I mean, ebooks are all over the place and they're distributed in places that print books aren't. And It's trying to understand the distribution levels of everything. And if your book isn't exclusive and you've got it selling elsewhere, but you can get whatever the percentage is from Chirp, you know, it's money. You've already paid for the book. You know, you've paid to have the audio made. Now it's trying to get returns, get back your investment and make some profit.
Or something that you could do later down the road when the book's been out for a while, maybe, you know, like to push it out into other areas.
Yeah, you could do it. Like, I'll go back to the ebook idea. If you've got a second book coming out, say you write mystery series, maybe you expand the distribution of the audio book, you know, and they don't get it for 6 months afterwards or a year afterwards, but it drives up your sales for the new book. Mm-hmm. And people go, oh God, I really like this. Oh, here's a new one. Well, All right, I'll get it on Audible. Yeah, you can see I am not a narrator, but it's Audible. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's all sort of a building awareness. Marketing is all about building awareness and getting people to like you. Word of mouth, and like you said, someone listens to it, loves it, and tells other people. Well, somebody, they're one of their friends, may not want an audio version, but they may really want that ebook. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know where the sales are going to come from.
Right. And I love the point you made about, you know, maybe you do a series. I'm negotiating with a potential client right now where she's got 5 books in a series, and they range from, I think the first one was released in about 2016, and it's sitting at about 11,000 in sales rank right now, where her newest one, which was written in 2022, is in the top 300. So now as we start to double back and bring them into audio, I'm assuming that the sales rank of that first book is going to receive a new, you know, pumping of adrenaline. And, you know, maybe when the third book is released, she decides to do a chirp promotion or a BookBub promotion or things like that. And now people start saying, oh, great, I'm this fantastic series. And then they're going and buying book 2, 3, 4, 5 at full market rate. So many, that was a great question.
So what do you find, what kind of books, just for you, do you like reading the best?
I think I narrate best what I read. You know, and it's kind of like, you know, does Tiger Woods play golf on his day off? I don't read many books anymore. So the only reading I do is for what I'm going to narrate. So I want to make sure that I'm enjoying that process, right? So I tend to love mystery, thrillers, suspense. I've got 2 series out that are kind of in that film noir style, you know, and I really like, this is my leading man character voice, and I really like doing this. And, you know, it's fun to get into that character, and he appears in many different series. And in fact, he's going to be the lead character of this other series that I was just referencing. So I like to do that. I get selected to read a lot of religious material. I think some narrators shy away from it because reading scripture can be very blah, 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 blah. You know, it's hard to get it out of your mouth smoothly. Takes a lot more practice than regular books. I'm not afraid of pronouncing the names. And so I get a lot of requests to do religious material, and I find it very interesting. So yeah, I'd say thriller, murder mystery to religious.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a variety.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think I have a voice for, you know, romance, and, you know, romance and erotica are the 2 top selling genres in audiobooks. And I just don't think I have the voice to carry that. So you got to work with what you are given. Right?
Audio for erotica?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
It actually is the number one genre. Nobody will admit to, well, yeah, I listen to 18 books a year of it, but it is the number one, I guess, subgenre of romance, which is the top genre. So erotica is the top dog. My wife and I, when we were first starting to do this, we were talking with a couple from our church, and the gentleman said, "You don't read erotica, do you?" And I'm like, no. We don't know this couple very well. And he says, "Well, that's good, because I'd hate to be like, honey, is this Scott Ellis?" You could have knocked me over with a feather. I was like, oh my, I was not expecting that.
So you never know what the reach is on some of this material.
That is so funny.
I know. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Yeah. Well, my wife and I have gotten more mileage out of that story, but see, I don't have the voice for it. So I do have one fellow on my team. Oh boy. He's got a voice for it. His name is Tom Hare. He's an excellent narrator. And yeah. So if you're looking for a good, sultry, smoky romance voice, yeah, look to him. You know, and there's lots of great narrators out there, and that's part of the vetting process. And what is so important about listening to every audition you get, you know, kind of just making sure that the voice fits.
How do people find a narrator? I mean, you're here, so obviously people can go to your website, but if they were starting from scratch and they don't have a publisher to help steer them in the right direction, where do they go for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. The two biggest platforms the number one platform is ACX.com. It stands for Audiobook Creation Exchange. It is the auditioning arm of Audible. So it is owned by Amazon. If you have an Amazon.com account, you simply go to ACX.com, log in using your Amazon credentials. And in the upper right-hand corner, there's going to be a little search box where you can search for producers for hire. And you can listen to samples of all kinds of narrators, or you would, and let me back up a little bit. Narrator and producer are interchangeable terms as far as the author is concerned. So when you get on there and it says producers for hire, that's what you're looking for. That's going to be your list of authors, because as an author, I am responsible for full production. Whether I do it myself or I have a production team behind me is all on me. It has no bearing on you necessarily. So the other thing that you can do is, if you already have your book for sale on Amazon.com, you can create an audition request. And, you know, you put in as much information as you can. What style narration are you looking for? What accent are you looking for? What kind of a quality do you want to the voice? And you'll start to receive auditions from people like myself. That's one great way to find them. Another way is Findaway Voices is probably the other big one, where we have profiles on there that you can get on and you can listen to, or you can make an agreement with Findaway that they will send you some samples that might fit. Pro Audio Voices is another one that you can go to them and hear some auditions that narrators like myself would submit.
That was Pro Audio Voices?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
We'll put all these little resources into the show notes on the website page too, for listeners, so they can easily find that. They don't have to try to go back through and listen again. Okay, I have a question that kind of has nothing to do with creating an audiobook, but do you do voice stuff? I mean, like when you watch movies about people who do voice work or whatever, you know, they're always drinking tea and doing voice warm-up exercises. And I'm just curious if that is part of your process. Are you always like looking to protect your voice, or is it something that you think about?
Absolutely. It's a tool. It's a muscle. It needs to be worked out. It needs to be stretched. It needs to be maintained. I'm in two musical duos in the Berkshires here. And so I do a lot of singing, which really keeps me in tune, pardon the pun, so that when I do my narration, you know, I am warmed up. For people that are interested in doing this, you know, some really important things are hydration. Number one, you've got to be drinking water while you're narrating and while you're not, so that you are well hydrated overall. Making sure that you're not going to narrate the day after you go and watch a Boston Bruins game where you're screaming and hollering and all of that stuff, right? I remember my daughter was on the high school swim team, and I was the loudest dad in the pool area. And, you know, I'd shout every time her ear was up so that she could hear me. And, you know, I'd say, oh, I've got a show tonight, or I need to narrate a chapter tonight. I need to pull this back a little bit. Managing when you narrate, you know, you may have noticed even in your own voice, you don't sound the same when you first wake up as to the middle of the day, as to the end of the night. So you have to kind of pick your times when you're going to narrate. I tried one book that I did. I thought, I'm going to do that character in my morning voice, you know, that voice. I saved all his lines until, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and come in here, you know, and kind of do that character's voice. It was a horrible experience, but we learned from everything. So yeah, you do have to protect it. You have to work at it. You know, we can't sit behind the microphone and narrate for 8 hours a day. It's chapter one has to sound just like chapter three, has to sound just like chapter 57. So, you know, when we were talking about costs a little bit earlier, you know, for me to spend that 90 hours, it's not really just 2 weeks. I've got to stretch it out. So, you know, you can't use that as a realistic deadline, because you don't want to push me to narrate your whole book in 4 days, because at the end of the book, I'm going to be sounding a little hoarse.
How long do you actually record for in a day?
I try to keep it to about 3 hours. You know, as a business owner, my day, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, is, you know, I'm doing a lot of emails. I'm meeting with a lot of potential clients, potential narrators, you know, all that kind of foo-for-all stuff. But I kind of find that if I do more than 3 hours, that last little bit, if I have some voiceovers that I have to go back in and do the next day, I really struggle to get them to match.
Yeah, because you're winding down. If nothing else, I mean, no matter what you do, I like you said, you sound different in the morning than you do in the afternoon or evening. And yeah, it really works that way. I know I used to have a little short 3-minute radio show, but when I was younger, I talked really fast. And they found that after 11 o'clock and 2 shots of tequila, you could finally understand me. So I got to record all my shows like that, which was, you know, a different time and place, but it was the only way that it worked out. They used to have running jokes at the radio station about how motor mouthing my way through everything. So
wait,
I know what you mean.
Who got the tequila, you or the listener?
Me. It's just slow it down and keep it sharp.
Right. You know, earlier I alluded to how voiceovers are the long pole in the tent, and maybe a good opportunity to go back to that here. You know, when I'm performing with my duo, we've set up our set list. We know what we're trying to do with our audience. We know where we want to start them, and we know where we want them to end up, and we know how we want to get them there. And we're in control of that. And we can kind of do some, you know, flying by the seat of our pants if we notice, okay, these three songs went over real well. This one didn't. We've got another song like that later in the list. Let's skip it, right? So I'm getting that visual and auditory feedback from my audience. Audiobooks are, I don't have that same luxury. I'm still trying to do the same thing. Chapter one, I'm starting you here. I know where I want to bring you. And because I've studied the manuscript, I know how I want to get you there. But if something takes you out of the narration for a moment, I don't know that. And my narration just keeps moving along. And I don't get the opportunity to be a little more dramatic because I noticed, oh, you noticed the squirrel out the window or something like that, and you broke your concentration. So as the narrator, I don't want to do anything that causes me to break your concentration. And a bad voiceover can do that. You know, if you get chapter one, she went to the car and decided that she was going to go to the mall. And once she got to the mall, right, you know, a voiceover like that, the listener is going to go, whoa, something happened. And now I have taken them out of the experience. And I don't want to do that. So, you know, that's why voiceovers really take a long time. And I want to make sure that my voice sounded exactly the same, because if it was a little tired, I have to manufacture that sound maybe in the beginning of the day when I'm starting to do voiceovers from yesterday's material. So I know, problems for me, not you, but thank you for letting me vent.
But it makes it so that there's a consistency and quality in what you want, because we have a client that is English, is written, you know, international journalist, and a company paid to buy the rights, audio rights, but and he's a great talker, they got some Englishman to do it who didn't know how to pronounce any names correctly, you know, and it took forever getting those names corrected, you know, and then trying to match it up so they were the same. It's like what you're talking about, not only if you're, it's a tired voice, but it's like reinserting corrections.
Yep. And see, I would say that was the narrator's fault, if you will. That's something that when they did their pre-read, they should have written those names down and sent a message to the client and said, how do you want these pronounced? Because it's always easier to get it right the first time, right? So when you're vetting your potential narrators, try to get a sense of how strongly are they hitching their little red wagon to yours. If it sounds like they want to say, no, you stay out of it, it's my job now, I got this, that might not be as much creative, what's the word I'm looking for, you know, management as you want to give up. You might want to be a little more involved. And if you do, make sure your narrator is going to welcome that involvement. You know, you still have to give us that creative freedom to interpret your work the way we do, because we are a listener. So, I mean, a reader of yours. So that is a valid interpretation. But, you know, that's why I do that pre-Zoom or pre-recording Zoom conference with my clients. So we can talk about those names and those places. And I just finished a book that had a lot of French. There was a French character, so it was the French accent, and how would they say this word, this phrase? And the client and I worked very closely on it so that it's the way he wants it to sound. So just make sure you have a narrator who's willing to work with you, because they should have gotten that right.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Well, and it's so important. I mean, the narration, the voice can make or break an audiobook. I mean, you know, like the Outlander series, Davina Porter, I mean, she reads those books brilliantly. And if it had been somebody else, you know, I don't know if it would work as well. So, I mean, when you decide to do your audiobook, you decide to hire a narrator, make sure that voice fits your story too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're the creator of the story. You've heard a sound in your head.
Yeah. One of the things that I recommend to authors looking for narrators is don't ask for, and I know this is going to sound kind of counterproductive to what we were just talking about, but don't post a 20-page manuscript for us to narrate as an audition, because you're going to know within the first 10 or 15 seconds if we're even in the running, right? And if I know that I've got to do a 20-minute audition, I might not take that time. And now all of a sudden, you don't get to hear my voice. So make your, you know, really the ideal length is about 3 minutes. So if you can put out an audition call and get 3 minutes, now who knows, maybe in that 3 minutes you say, that's my person, hands down, no doubt. Then great. You've gotten the biggest number of auditions you can because you weren't asking for a ton of material. And then what you do is you vet them out. You sort them out. You say, yes, maybe no. Yes, maybe no. Yes, maybe no. Then you go back to all of your yeses and you send them an email and you say, listen, you're my finalist. I'd like to hear another scene, a longer scene, or whatever. And that's information that you get to put in the back of your head, because if I write back to you and say, no, I gave you 3 minutes. If you can't decide from my 3 minutes, I don't have time. You wouldn't have wanted to work with me anyway. So you're kind of being able to vet who's joining your team as a narrator. And if they're willing to do the longer section, you know they're willing to work with you. I'm just about to finish a 6-book series that's set in Hawaii. And when I did the initial audition, the author wrote to me, this is Chip Hughes, we've done 5 or 6 books together. He wrote to me and he said, there's a lot of pidgin, which is the dialect of Hawaii. I need to hear you and my other finalist do these pidgin accents. So I went to YouTube and I looked it up and I found out, there's really 2 very distinctively different takes on pidgin. And I copied a clip of each of those, sent him the YouTube video links. So he didn't hear me do a word of it. And I said, could you just give me an idea of which one of these fit more closely to what you have in mind? I got an email from him probably half an hour later saying, you've got the job. I think it was because he saw I was willing to go and do that extra work. And I found out that the fella that I beat out for it is a film and television actor who has, you know, lots of credits to his name, but maybe he wasn't interested in doing that work. I was. I showed that I'm going to be diligent in my approach, and I won the gig. So.
Yeah. Well, is voiceover now becoming, instead of being a waiter for unemployed actors, they're doing audiobooks?
It's the new waiter. Yes, I think that's great. And, you know, that's something that really only came about in like the last 10 years. You know, it used to be that you had to live in one of the big cities and go into a professional studio. But only in the last 8-10 years, you know, now we can build these studios in our home. I'm sitting in a spare bedroom in my house, and floor, wall, and ceiling are completely covered with, you know, acoustic foam. So it's got a nice dead sound. We can do it. My wife and I, we have a camper, and we love to be adventurous and go to all of these places. And at the end of the month, we're leaving for 10 weeks. We always do like a southern swing in the Gulf Coast of Florida. And I have outfitted the back seat of our Jeep that we use as our tow vehicle, so that when we're at some campground, I can go and insulate the back of the Jeep. I narrate my books in the Jeep. So I'm going to be starting a book tomorrow, and I will start it in the Jeep so that when we go away, it still has the same sound, because it doesn't matter where the Jeep is as long as I'm in the Jeep.
Well, that's very creative. Well, I think on that note, we're going to wrap this up here, Scott. And I want to remind everybody, Scott is going to be giving a very extensive talk about all of this on Monday, January 16th, I believe it is. Yes, at 7 p.m. Pacific. If you want to sign up, it's free. And just go to writersandpublishersnetwork.com and you'll see it up in the upper right corner. Click and you can register, and you'll be receiving the link that day to do it. And again, if you want to know more about what Scott Ellis's information is, it's scottellisreads.com. You can learn more from him. Any closing comments, Scott?
Just thank you so much for having me. I wish you the best of luck on season three. You two have a great cross-ruff here for being co-hosts. So I think that's going to be a very successful platform for you. So thank you for having me, and I'll look forward to seeing you again.
Oh, we'll be talking in a couple weeks, and thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you so much, Scott.
Talking Book Publishing is brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network, a resource for writers and indie publishers at every level, and offers tools to be successful in their writing career. Writers and Publishers Network.com.